Fiasco in the Philippines.
Mother of all matricides in Bangkok.
Why one Indonesian woman might have been better off with stinky pits in Singapore.
Anti-Semitism takes center stage in Malaysia.
And a look back at this year's top stories.
Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast, our look at the latest and greatest reporting from our 8 newsrooms in Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Todd Reese, and I'm the managing editor of Coconuts Bangkok.
And I'm associate editor Tara Kamaltanavith. Hey, guys.
Hey, welcome welcome to episode 25 of the Coconuts Podcast.
A quarter.
Quarter of a century?
A quarter of a hundred, yes.
It's like 20, yeah. Which, by the way, is going to be the last episode. Enjoy the ep. It's going to be the last one. This signifies the end of season one.
And to wrap things up, at the end, we're going to do a roundup of this year's top stories as a cherry on top of this season.
Yeah, we're going to do our usual news hustle. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to chat about some things. And then, yeah, let's take a look back at...
The year.
The year. The year, according, not to us...
But to you guys.
To you. This is 2019, according to you guys, based on the things that you read the most and responded to the most and seemed to have the most interest in.
And there were some surprises for me, so there were definitely some surprises.
I can't wait to hear it.
And also, today is Black Friday at coconuts.co.
Oh, that's right. Today is Black Friday. Happy Black Friday.
And happy Thanksgiving. Late Thanksgiving. A day later, but
as
that
a vegetarian,
also,
that means nothing to me. But continue. You don't
need, yeah, that also means that users get 50% off Coco Plus yearly memberships today. So sign up before midnight on Friday and get not one but three coconuts tote bags. Three. You can like take it to the mall.
Three coconuts
pool,
tote bags.
Take
you
it
know
to
the
beach.
Room may be full of tote bags, but seriously, I mean no, seriously. These ones are pretty design forward and cool looking. Like,
right.
They're pretty dope tote bags.
And Thailand, we're going to ban plastic bags soon, so get that tote.
Tote up.
Tote up. Should we hit the news now?
Let's do it. Every 2 years, Southeast Asian athletes meet to celebrate sport in unity at the Southeast Asian Games, or SEA Games. The games rotate between member nations, and this year it was the Philippines' turn. 14 years after it last got to play host. To say it's been an unmitigated disaster would be a simple acknowledgement of the obvious. Despite warnings that preparations had been inadequate, one venue was in a politician crony's family-owned bowling alley, it sort of blew everyone away by just how bad it all turned out. Athletes were stranded at the airport upon arrival and left sleeping on floors because they couldn't check into their hotels. Thailand's national football team was staying hours away from the field it was supposed to use for practice, and the facilities were so dire they decided to just use the streets.
To practice?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn, that's bootstrap.
There wasn't halal food for the region's many, many Muslim delegations, as earlier pleas from the National Muslim Organization pretty much went ignored. What perhaps best summarized the sad state of affairs was a video tour of a bathroom at the Rizal Memorial Sports Complex. Everything looks fine until the camera goes through a door into a stall and finds... Tara, how many toilets do you expect to find in one toilet stall?
Wait, how can the answer be anything but one?
Yeah, well, that's wrong, at least in this case, because there were two toilets sitting side by side, prepared for some real very intimate regional camaraderie. With us to explain how this epic fuster cluck unfolded is Coconut's own Rachel Malaguit in Manila.
Whatever... The organizers and the internet trolls are saying the SEA Games is turning out to be a disaster. There have been so many problems going on that it's actually hard to keep track. For one, there's the issue of the lack of halal food, a point raised by Singapore and which led Malaysia to bring their own food. Some of the facilities are also unfinished, like for example, that media room that looks so depressing, it's been dubbed by at least one netizen as the writer's gulag. Instead of taking responsibility for this, the organizers, led by House Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano, blamed the media for what's going on. In a press conference today, Cayetano even said that there's a smear campaign that's going on against him, and he plans to unmask the people behind this so-called smear campaign after the games end on December 11th. Hopefully, moving forward, everything is going to be smooth sailing, because even President Rodrigo Duterte, who happens to be Cayetano's ally, is reportedly angry with how things are unfolding. And take note, the games have yet to start.
A Bangkok woman made a grisly discovery inside her friend's family fridge on Monday. Her friend's torso, head, legs, and arms.
Wow.
The unidentified woman who's gone looking for a friend at her house says she confronted the woman's son who was at her home, who then proceeded to shoot himself in the head. Police arrived to find the son, 20-year-old Sira Somdet, lying in a pool of blood. He died later at the hospital, and now investigators say all evidence points to him having killed and cut up his own mom, 42-year-old Yuri Tawan, and storing the pieces in the refrigerator. Yuri's friend had come looking for her on Monday morning because she became unreachable by phone. She said Sira told her that his mother wasn't home, but she didn't buy that because her car was still there. That's when she reportedly noticed the fridge was ajar and came in to a shock of a lifetime when she looked inside. Panicked, she screamed. Sira pointed the gun at his head and pulled the trigger. While armchair detectives online have been spinning unfounded conspiracy theories that Sira could not have been responsible, the lead investigator said Tuesday that he was 100% certain, saying security cameras showed no one else at the home when the murder happened. The final autopsy results are still pending as investigators work to establish a motive for the crime.
Sharonia Baruntu went all in for her birthday and rented a room at the upscale W Hotel on Singapore's Sentosa Island. The Indonesian woman, who works in Singapore, invited some friends along for what was supposed to be a fun stay. At some point, they broke a glass door in the room and called maintenance to fix it. They were moved to another room, and in the morning were rousted from bed by police at the door, who arrested them for possessing drugs.
Oof. Quite a birthday party.
Well, apparently a hotel worker had narked on them after seeing a sizable bag of white powder in the room. So much for expectations of privacy, and called the cops. Except, as Sharonia tried to tell the police, there was one problem with the whole thing. The white powder wasn't for her nose, but her armpits. Tawas, as she told them, is a common Indonesian deodorant used to keep one's pits nice and fresh. Well, the totally unconvinced cops put them all in cuffs and took them down to the station, where they remained behind bars until nearly 2 a.m. the next morning. Though what happened earlier this month, Sharonia took to Instagram with her story, saying they were all humiliated by being paraded out of the hotel in cuffs and then locked up 14 hours and only given one meal. After being freed, the hotel had the gall to demand 1,700 Singaporean dollars for the damaged door, which it only returned after the woman's mother complained to W owner Marriott International. Coconut Singapore reached out repeatedly for a response from the hotel, as well as Marriott, to find out what their privacy policies are for guests in their rooms, but have not received any response.
Yeah, man, I'd be pretty mad. Is she, like, deciding to sue or anything?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I thought that was very interesting, like, what... You kind of assume a expectation of privacy. Of
right,
course, sure,
right.
Illegal stuff is illegal stuff, and that goes without saying, but there's... you know, what else are Marriott International employees? Are they instructed to notify management about things they see? Are they on the lookout for this?
Right.
And what I want to know is if that is such a thing, if that's in the policy, what's on that list? What else are they looking for in customer rooms?
It's also crazy to me that they didn't test the substance.
Homosexuality is illegal in Singapore. Is that on their list?
Right. Yeah.
Well, apparently the cops did, but it took like 14 hours.
Right.
It's silly.
The Malaysian net was left aghast Tuesday after a photo of a university graduate giving a Nazi Sieg Heil salute at a graduation ceremony went viral. To dispel any misunderstanding, the student afterward wrote online that the salute was indeed done in praise of Adolf Hitler. Yes, the man responsible for the death of millions of Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and many other so-called undesirables. Quote, "This Hitler symbol that I styled on the sacred UMS stage is because the world is blind and deaf when Jews rule. As if Islamic countries are clowns for the world's entertainment. said the student who goes by the name Ibn Ruru. Therefore, in solidarity with Gaza, and because of anger, hatred, and vengeance towards Jews, therefore I thank Hitler for the Holocaust, he continued.
Oh, tell us what you really think.
To understand how Malaysians reacted to the graduation ceremony and how common Nazi symbols are in the country, we turn to KL Managing Editor Jacqueline Raposo.
The internet's reaction, by and large, was just condemnation. I think there was a lot of people saying that this kid graduated from university but without very much of an education, seeing as he didn't seem to understand history very much or too well. Well, there is sort of this neo-Nazi undercurrent that is present in a very small number of Malaysians. There was a case earlier this year of a festival, a neo-Nazi Malay power music festival that had several bands on the lineup who identified themselves as neo-Nazis. That festival ended up being canceled, but it sort of brought out this group of people who align themselves with pro-Malay stands, where they want to rid the country of other ethnicities and minorities, and they ally themselves with neo-Nazism, really without knowing very much about what, you know, Nazis actually had to say about other ethnicities that weren't their own.
And it's not just Malaysia. Whether due to the lack of education or indifference to the history, Hitler and Nazi icons are all too common in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and here in Thailand, this is a common trope of news coverage. Most recently, I mean, this comes up all the time, but most recently when a member of that top girl idol group, BNK40, whatever, wore a T-shirt covered by the Imperial German war flag, which has a swastika front and center at a concert or on TV a few months ago.
And right, and she came out afterwards to apologize and said she didn't know what it meant, which to me, the ignorance of being ignorant is kind of even scarier.
Sure.
But she actually went on to advocate for the awareness raising of this part of history.
She apologized quickly. To add salt to the wound, the day she did that happened to be like International Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Right. I remember that.
So she did apologize.
Well, sadly, that's just one of the many examples of the use of Nazi symbolism in Thailand. I've seen Nazi symbols in like buses, trucks.
Oh, it comes up all the time. My motorcycle taxi rider the other day had a big old swastika on the back of his helmet.
And to be fair, I don't think they know what it is at all.
I think the counterpoint to this is Western folks wearing their Che Guevara t-shirts and their Mao Zedong shirts as kind of thinking they're being cheeky and cool. Whereas there's groups who would say like, oh, hey, that person killed the fuck out of, sorry, maybe that's too much. Like, hey, that person killed the hell out of my people responsible for massive death. So, you know, I absolutely agree that in this day and age of global knowledge, it's pretty ignorant to be wearing this stuff, but it's a little preachy and lectury double standard too, maybe at the same time.
Yeah, again, but I would be shocked regardless if I saw a university student do a salute like that.
And now on to Hong Kong, which for once is not the top story. Hong Kong sent its strongest message of support for long-running protests this week in the form of landslide wins for pro-democratic lawmakers. There was record turnout for Sunday's vote that saw pro-democracy candidates win 388 out of 452 district council seats, a gain of 263 seats. While district councillors aren't lawmakers and preside over much more prosaic matters such as transportation and trash collection, their election is the closest thing Hong Kong has to representative democracy, and the council has long been overwhelmingly pro-Beijing. Though the outcome didn't seem to win concessions from the city's unelected leaders, the results brought a rare moment of celebration in what has increasingly become angry and bitter protests. With that jubilant mood now almost a week behind, I asked Coconuts Hong Kong's Vicky Wong where things stand today.
So I think it's important to note that while Sunday's elections delivered better than expected results for the pro-democracy side, and this is a cause for celebration, for a lot of people it doesn't mean that the protesting stops. You have to remember that almost 6,000 people have been arrested so far since protests began in June, of which about 900 have been formally charged. And although the key demand to withdraw the extradition bill has been met, there are still four other big demands that have not been met, the big one being the independent inquiry into police brutality, and calls for that inquiry aren't going to go away. So although this week's elections have been peaceful and a much needed kind of reprieve from the weekly and almost daily protests, I do anticipate that there will be possibly more protests to come.
Hey, well, that's the news, but I want to circle back. You know, at the top of that, we started in Manila, a place where corruption and incompetence seem to run in equal measure.
Oh, weird. We get a lot of those in Thailand, too. Deja vu.
Yeah, you know, indeed, there's a lot of parallels. Yeah, Thailand, Philippines, we love our beauty pageants.
Mm-hmm.
Really hardcore about our beauty pageants.
Karaoke's.
slow-burning Muslim insurgencies claiming lives. There's just a lot of parallels between the two places. So in that vein, you know, these things come up, and often there's stories in Manila or stories... Well, for us, there's often... And here in Bangkok, there's stories that happen in Manila, and we're like, oh, that sounds very familiar. That could have happened in Bangkok, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So today, I do want to play a little game with you. It's called Manila or Bangkok.
Ooh, catchy.
So the way this game works, I'm gonna give you an example... Okay. Of some official malfeasance, corruption, or incompetence. And I want you to try to guess, did this happen in Manila or Bangkok?
Okay. I see what you're doing.
Yeah. So let's see what we got here. Number one. A corrections department, meaning the people who run the prisons, implement an early release program and then proceed to let out some of the nation's worst rapists and murderers. Bangkok or Manila?
Manila,
you remember this one?
I remember this one because I think it's quite unforgettable when a bunch, like what, upwards of 200 prisoners get released.
Oh, I think it was more than that.
Right. I remember that story.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on the show. And among the people released were like
serial killers.
Like very
rapists.
Famous from Manila, like Philippines history, recent modern history. Like these horrible like rapists.
Right.
I
wonder what happened to them. Did they ever round them up?
Oh, they're all back.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. It's all fine now. And people were held accountable.
that's both cities again.
Okay, so that's one for Manila. Next. The prime minister puts his brother, a top army commander, who the military's handed all sorts of lucrative construction projects to, into parliament, where he is famously absent from sessions.
Bangkok?
That's Bangkok. That's right. Prayut Chan-o-cha, the former junta leader and current prime minister, his brother Pricha Chan-o-cha, was like a regional army commander. There's so much more. I mean, Pricha has just been a gift to news headlines in over the years in what seemed to be examples of nepotism. And all sorts of back channel dealing, but most famously, Pricha was put into the what had been the NLA, the assembly, the junta appointed assembly, and then like never showed up to meetings.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Ah, here's another one. The political head of state calls his political rival a stupid bitch.
That sounds like Briut.
Bangkok or Manila?
Bangkok.
You're right. You are right. It's Bangkok. That's true. Prayut never used that term. Actually, that was former Prime Minister Apisit Vejjajiva.
What? Usually he's pretty composed, no?
He's supposed to be the nice guy, right? No,
yeah.
Inglak Shinawat, who was deposed by Prayut a few years later, called her one of those E somethings, basically, yeah.
That's bad.
Okay, next. Thousands of drug suspects are killed in what is euphemistically called extrajudicial killings, meaning they didn't get a trial. They just sort of like, the cops got a green light to go out and gun them down.
Well, I want to say
Bangkok or Manila.
Both.
Oh, very good. That was a trick one.
Yeah.
That was both. Back in the administration of Thaksin Shinawat,
yes, I remember that.
And the early noughties, he led a campaign that was pretty much thousands of people killed nationwide in Thailand.
He called it the war on drugs.
Exactly. And it was a precursor to Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's very famous now, his campaign promise to fill the bay with the bodies of drug suspects. Mm. And yeah, they've killed a lot.
Yeah.
Both, good answer. Okay. The political head of state calls his foreign counterpart son of a bitch. Bangkok or Manila?
Manila?
No, you're all over this. You're scoring mad points. That's right. That was also Duterte.
Oh, really? That was a key. That was just a guess.
And do you remember who he called a son of his foreign counterpart that he called a son of a bitch?
Trump.
U.S. President Barack Obama. He also called the Pope Francis, a son of a bitch.
what a great guy, a personable guy, careful.
Okay, last one. This is the place where the big guy tried to buy out all the newspapers criticizing him, only to change tack and sue them into oblivion.
Manila?
Oh, got you. No, that was Bangkok.
No.
That's Thaksin Shinawat again. He famously tried to buy out Matichon newspaper.
Oh, I remember that.
A long time ago, back in like 2003, 2004. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And failing, he then proceeded to he went lawsuit happy because, again, defamation is a criminal offense in Thailand, not a civil offense. And he just, he got all their tails between their legs through the power of the courts.
Huh. Okay, he owns Voice TV now, right?
Well, no, that was Pang Tong Ta. That was his son.
Who founded that,
another billionaire this week. Cool. Well, hey, that was I'm going to give you a solid, fully corrupt score in our game of Bangkok or Manila.
Nice. Okay, now on to my game. I came up with the game too, Todd. It's called Top 2019 Stories. It's not that catchy.
Well, here we are. I mean, we're days away from December.
Yeah, we're so close to the end of the year,
y'all. So this is our chance to have a little moment of reflection.
Yeah.
And so you're going to hit me with how does this game work?
So this game, you're going to guess the, you know, because I'm sure you read all of Coconut Stories. So I want you to guess the top five Coconut Stories of the year.
Anything prior to April I may struggle with, but let's do it. Okay, you got to give me a hint, though. You got
to
at least give
me likes. They're unexpectedly way on the trashy side.
Well, we should qualify. By top stories, I assume you mean most read.
Yes, right? As in the most views per page.
This is not our fault, dear listeners.
This is not our top story chosen.
This is all you. This is a mirror held up to all of you. Okay, number one. You got to give me a hint.
Okay, it's from Manila.
Okay, in Manila, I'm going to guess it's like some celebrity calling some other... No, I bet it's Duterte when he called some guy. He made fun of someone for being homosexual and shot him or something.
No, you forget there's one thing more powerful than profanity, and it's sex.
Oh, yeah, I'm assuming that's the through line to all of these stories.
Yes, basically.
Wait, this is... Where exactly did it happen in the Philippines?
It happened in Boracay. And
on a beach,
and it's about a Taiwanese tourist who was fined.
The itsy bitsy,
yes.
The tiny, super,
yes.
Very small
bikini. Yes, yes. And like, if you see pictures of this, it's like literally just kind of a string. Right. And so a lot of people apparently flock to take pictures of this tourist because of the risqué-ness of the
I thought back
bikini.
In the 80s, that was like normal. Like, that was on beaches everywhere.
We're in 2019.
Oh, that's right. Point taken. It's a different road.
I mean, if she like transported back to the 80s, she would fit right in.
No, and I remember seeing that and being like, thinking like, hey, this girl must feel pretty good about herself.
Mm-hmm. But seriously, y'all, that's the one you clicked on the most?
The most read story. Well, I mean, think about it. People wanted to see the bikini. They wanted to see how small it was.
We censored it.
And
sorry.
It's not just guys. I'm sure women are too. Like I want to see what the bikini was.
I would. I clicked on it. Not
the people
lie.
Have a right to know, Tara. The people have a right to know.
To see. They have the right to see. Okay, what do you think the second one was? And it's in the same vein. That's your hint.
In the same vein. Where? Give me a hint.
Philippines. The Filipino model again.
A Philippines model. And give me a little more to go on.
It inappropriate?
Something inappropriate.
It involves boobs.
Boobs. Did boobs pop out? Were boobs
almost.
Like wardrobe fail boobs? Or just like big boobs?
Inappropriate.
Oh, it was like
showing?
Inappropriate use of boobs.
Yes, you wore your boobs bad.
Oh man, no, I have no idea. Except for I'm going to say that some model had big boobs and someone was offended by them.
Well, it was a freelance model in the Philippines, and she wore like a very skimpy outfit. I think you've seen it around. It's like a tank top, it's short shorts, and the tank top like covers the short shorts, and you see her like.
I haven't seen it around enough.
Yeah, there's like some significant side boob action. You can see her like waiting for the ATM, and people were just like without asking her, taking photos of her.
Well,
so
it wasn't
like,
even a public event.
No, she was just out. And people were like, that's so inappropriate. It looked like she was just wearing a t-shirt, like a tank top with nothing underneath.
And people were mad.
People were mad. And that's the second best story of the year, y'all.
Popular story. Let's be careful.
No.
The second most popular story
of the year.
We're not taking responsibility for this. Okay, number three, hit me.
Now, this one's about an influencer and something funny she did that went viral.
Oh, man. Is she a Viking? From one of the Viking places?
No.
No, she's a...
Visceral. A bizarre story,
failed
story.
Okay, she did something weird, but it didn't involve her boobs, her butt, or her body.
Right.
Okay.
And she's from the mainland.
Oh, she did something uncouth. We know these stories well enough to sort of piece together the emotional outlines of them.
She was a blogger.
She was a blogger. Was she a... food blogger?
Yes, she is a food blogger.
Oh, she ate something.
Yes.
And it was something creepy and it got, at first I was thinking it was the woman who like burned off her hair in some demo, but this is the one, she ate something and like it kind of ate her back.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're so close.
What was it?
She ate a live octopus.
The octopus.
Yes, she live streamed herself eating a live octopus and like halfway through it got stuck in her face. Like at first it was like all like casual. She was like, oh, I'm eating an octopus. And then all of a sudden the animal started sucking back and she was like, oh my God, look how hard it's sucking. She's still amused. And then all of a sudden it starts like really sucking her and she's like, oh my God, it hurts.
No, it was Leviathan from the depth.
Like I can't get it
off. Jules Verne shit going to take her down.
And I love how at the end of the video she's like, I'll eat it later. Yeah, so that's number three.
I love animal revenge stories.
Okay, number four. Now, this one's pretty newsy. This one's pretty newsy. It's about the environment, and it's from KL.
Kuala Lumpur has an environment, and there was news about it. Was this pretty recent? Because there was a story burning up the charts on the real-time analytics just... some weeks ago.
Yes, it was November 4th.
I think I got this one. This was the discovery in some jungle of a huge, big old pile of food panda garbage.
Yes.
All over this forest.
Yes, you're even quoting the headline.
And people were like, oh wow. But then the people who lived there were like, oh no, this has been going on a long time.
Yes.
There's all this food panda crap everywhere.
Yes, yes, yes. It was when this guy called Andy Hickson, this netizen, filmed this pile of trash in a Malaysian forest.
Like he was on a hike and he came across it and suddenly it was like this mountain of, for those who don't know, probably most of you do. Food Panda is a regional. I think it's Singapore. I don't know. It's in Bangkok.
It's in Singapore. I think it's in about a couple of Asian cities.
Yeah. Food delivery service.
Yeah. So it was basically like just a huge, like really huge pile of trash just sitting in a forest. And this guy filmed it and like basically was like, what the hell, guys? And it went viral. And it's crazy that like a story we published earlier this month became one of the most read stories of the year.
So did Food Panda ever respond? I can't remember if there was a follow-up, like what their explanation was.
Well, as of November 4th, Coconuts have reached out to Food Panda and Mr. Hickson, and we haven't heard back as of the publishing of this article.
Chose to play it that way. Okay.
And finally,
number five.
From our own turf, Bangkok. I'm not even going to give you a hint because I feel like you...
Is it news or is it sleaze?
It's hard news.
This is not the apron, the waitresses with the impractical uniforms. And
although
side
that's
boots?
Climbing up the charts.
It could. I mean, we're still got a couple weeks left.
Yeah. There's a story, if you guys haven't read, about this like waiters at a restaurant that just wore bikini bottoms or hot pants with... an apron with really
their boobs
big boobs
are bouncing out all over the place. Oh my goodness!
And the story has been climbing up the charts like crazy in the past few weeks. So it might make it up there, but it's not that. It's harder news.
Okay, it's hard news. Bangkok. Wow. Okay. Was it my story?
Yes.
Our story, actually. We worked on that together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone wrote on it.
I've got it. It was a team. It was team coverage.
It was also Milk, our
other
editor.
It was team coverage. That morning started. I had woken up far earlier than is my wont to go cover U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who had was given his he was supposed to give the speech on regional engagement. This was right after the U.S. had embraced Thailand, welcomed back into the Brotherhood of Democracies. And Pompeo gave what was a pretty lame speech. Mm-hmm. And I was just planning, I'm going to brief it because he didn't really say anything. It was a lot of platitudes like, you know, like, oh, well, if there's anyone you can trust, it's us. Meanwhile, the trade war is going on. So anyway, so I'm walking out of that thinking I'm going to rush back and write a brief or do it on my phone. And then I was with a colleague and call came in. Oh, there's been some blasts, some explosions
at the government at center.
First it was the Mahanakhon Tower.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Near BTS Chong, the tallest building in Thailand.
Yes, I remember.
We raced over there, and I threw down a Facebook Live, and we had while I was in the car over there, we were able to. So you're back in the newsroom, and I love this. This is the stuff I live for, right? We're able to bang out like a couple sentences, get a breaking news update. I had people messaging me and I had people telling me later even like, very surprised Coconuts Bangkok has this story about explosions in Bangkok. They weren't getting anywhere else because we were way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, yeah, because you were awake so early and we were at the newsroom.
We were ahead of the curve. So we got that out. We did a Facebook Live and we followed it very closely throughout the day. Mm-hmm. That's also the day that I met the prime minister.
Oh, yeah.
I ended up at the police headquarters where he came in. And
gave a press conference about
He kind of growled his way through that.
Yeah, I remember because I was live translating.
I propped up my phone to do a live session, and then you were typing into the comments like translations.
Yeah. I was so stressed because Bria talks like not well.
Like mumble. That's my Prayut impression.
And the biggest thing was like we were all expecting him to address the bombs right away because, you know, it happened in several key locations in Bangkok.
That's just it. It was a number of government symbolic. It obviously was not designed to hurt people.
Right.
It was designed to get attention.
Yeah.
The day of the big American talk, and there was an ASEAN summit going on.
Yes, that too.
It was very embarrassing. That's why a couple weeks ago, basically the whole city was locked down.
Right. They had because so many.
Thailand has had so many embarrassing ASEAN hosting moments that they're like, okay, we're just going to lock the city down and not like let anyone move.
But what was like surprising to me was that when Prayut gave that presser, he spent like the first 20 minutes or 10 minutes or however many minutes talking about something completely irrelevant. And then he switched to it and barely touched on it.
That's why I call him the garrulous prime minister, the loquacious and garrulous. I mean, the dude talks and he's always got, it's always very stream of conscience.
Yes.
He doesn't really go off talking points.
Right.
And you
it's hard to follow. It's hard and very hard to translate.
Did you ever see his Friday night show?
Yes.
That used to be a work of art, like performance
art.
Oh,
the one that like was in force on TVs. Yeah. Oh, gosh. And that's our top stories.
I'm glad there were two news items in there, actually. Usually, people, this is like the Facebook algorithm. The stories that people see are the ones that get the most engagement, which are the ones that tend to be the trashiest. They don't see the deeply reported features, the investigative journalism, the topics of matter in weight and gravitas that we certainly publish and then, you know, like 50 people read.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. We'll continue doing it because that's why we're here.
And we'll continue with the weird and trashy stories, too, because that's why we're here, too.
Well, the year's not over yet. So catch up on all these stories and more to come at coconuts.co.
But that does mark the end of season one of the Coconuts podcast, which is going to take a holiday, but will return in the new year.
Tara, thank you so much for being the beating heart of them and for putting up with me.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure working to bring you guys these audio news for the last, six months?
5 months, 25 episodes.
Yeah. It's been a hustle, but it's been a joy. So thank you for following along to our audiences. Thank you for tuning in. We will not have been here without you guys.
While we're on hiatus, we will occasionally put out some new eps with some of our favorite moments and stories from season one's 5 months of show. So stay tuned for that and updates about the show. For now, my thanks to all of you for joining us. Have a great holiday. Happy New Year. And we'll see you in 2020.
And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
From From Bangkok, this is Todd Reese.
And I'm Tara Kamal-Tanavith. Thanks to our audio engineer, Iniko Mantagon. The Coconuts podcast is recorded at Noice Studio in Bangkok. Check it out on Facebook at N-O-I-C-E Studio.
The Coconuts podcast is written and produced by Todd Reese and Tara Kamal-Tanavith. Our executive producer is Byron Perry.
Thank you so much for tuning in.
Bye. See ya.